Okay, so we should make a start on the second of our PHP talks. We have Peter Sawillo talking about attribute-oriented programming in PHP. Please make him welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris. Who here, show of hands, knows what attribute-oriented programming is? Okay, so that's about two people. All right. Who's you guys used it before at all, or had to play around by any chance? Okay. Well, I'll start off by explaining what an attribute is. You've all actually seen attributes before. Inside comment tags, for instance, you can have a look at some parameter tags or a return tag. They're parameters. They're attributes. What an attribute, or what I'll define it as, is sort of some metadata or an annotation inside your source code that doesn't necessarily mean anything to the language environment itself that you can apply your own meaning to. So in this case, the meaning is relevant to the documentation system. The documentation system knows when it sees a parameter tag, that means that it has to put it in a particular table with a particular formatting, and it can provide links to it and all that sort of stuff. So in terms of attribute-oriented programming, we can take these attributes and we can make our own attributes for ourselves. Instead of the documentation attributes that are very static in terms of they're only used at documentation time, we can have attributes that are accessed at runtime and we can respond to whatever the values of those attributes are. So there's built-in functionality for some languages, Java and .NET. Someone was telling me the other day that Ruby and Python perhaps has these sort of functions as well. PHP doesn't provide that functionality. But I'll show you some ideas that we're using to use those, make it work in PHP. I'll start off with, I've got three examples here. The first one is going to be just a simple illustration to explain what attribute-oriented programming is, so using these attributes to achieve functionality in your code. Then I'll have a look at a particular example from the Java environment, and I'll follow up with what we're doing at our work with web service permissioning and things like that. And following that, I might have a look at something beyond there if we have time. So here we go. First one here, a simple use case. So there's three different examples of attributes. The top one has an attribute inside just a comment. The second one is a Java-style annotation. And the third one is a C#-style, I forget what they call them. I think it's metadata or an attribute as well. The idea here is imagine there was no such thing as a unit testing framework and you wanted to write your own unit testing framework. You decided that instead of having two files, the unit test itself and the actual code you're testing, you wanted to bundle everything into the one file. You would have to have some sort of annotation to say, this function here is a test function, whereas this one here is not. So when you have your testing code, you want to look through the file, pull out all the files that are indeed test functions, and execute those as part of your test while ignoring the other functions. So in this case, I've made a completely arbitrary attribute that I've called test function, and you would write some code that goes and processes the attributes and looks for functions with that particular annotation. So does that make sense so far? Because that's pretty much what it is. That's all it is. The only thing is you apply whatever meaning you want to these attributes. In this case, the meaning is this is a particular test function. In the example I'm going to show you now from the Java world, has anyone used Java before? Or anyone programming Java actively? Or Enterprise Edition Java? Yep, so... does anyone not use xdocklet who uses Enterprise Java? Okay, so you actually have done attribute-oriented programming before. The concept with Java Enterprise Edition is you have these beans, and a bean is pretty much just a unit of business logic, and all your functionality sits inside there. But to make that integrate with the Java server, a Java Enterprise server, and the Java clients themselves as well, you need to provide, for every single bean you have, you need to have a remote interface class, so that remote clients can interact with it. You need to have a home interface class, and I forget why you need a home interface, but I think you do. You need a XML file that defines attribute types of that particular class, like who's allowed to access it, container, transaction types that you want to use inside it, and things like that. The problem with that is every time you change any functionality inside the bean, you probably will have to go and end up changing all these other files as well. So I was learning at uni, and the first example I always give you is you have to write all these functions yourself. And if you change the first function inside the bean, you have to change the remote interface and you may have to change the XML file or something along the lines of that. The example here, let's use mouse here, ejb bean, you can see we've got an attribute inside the class comments for this particular class definition. That attribute gets picked up at, it's like a preprocessor before compile time. It sees that attribute and says, oh, I know that you want a bean called record. I'll go create you a remote interface, a home interface, and I'll go generate some XML for you. And it's pretty much generating a whole bunch of scaffolding code for you so you don't have to worry about it. Then if you go and change the bean, next time you compile that code, it'll go and regenerate all those four classes in the XML file for you so you don't need to worry about it yourself. Are we still following? So just as an example of xdocklet, you can see down here we have xdocklet has a list of so many different attributes there, and that's just for the class annotations. They have a list that's just as long for the method annotations, and you can, and each one of them has about 5 different values you can stick in it. And I'm not going to go through any of them, but the point is they've come up with a huge array of stuff that they can solve, a huge array of problems they can solve just by putting comments inside your code. It'll go and do a whole bunch of stuff for you that you don't need to worry about, and that's the crux of what we're doing here. The problem with this is, because it's a PHP talk, these particular ones, so when I have my code here that says EJB bean name equals record in xdocklet, during the compilation stage of your Java build process, it will say, I'm going to go build all that stuff for you. That relies on the fact that it's a compiled language, so it has a preprocessor, and it preprocesses all the code before it compiles it. PHP is obviously not a compiled language, so what we want to do is we want to have runtime attributes that we can interrogate at runtime, which is obviously going to be slightly different from this. So the example we use at work, we build web systems, web applications, and we've just refactored it recently to be a very service-orientated architecture. So we have CRMs and document management systems, and if one wants to talk to another one, you invoke a service from the other module and you talk to that service. And we thought that would be a cool idea to make it, if every single one of them was a web service as well, we wouldn't have to rewrite any code, but yet everyone could still talk to our system because it's pretty much a one-to-one mapping between our services and what we would expose to web services. The only thing that was lacking was a permissioning system. So if we're going to expose all of our functions to the open big wide world, we need to have a permissioning structure for every single function that is accessible. So we need to say, you need to be an admin user to access this function, or you need to be, you know, a marketing manager to access this particular function over here. The old way to do that would be, I would have created a register on a function that says, get function names, for instance, and it would return me a list of all the functions that you're allowed to call externally, and all the users who are allowed to access those particular functions, so the user classes that are allowed to do that. I don't like that because every time you change a class and you maybe if you change a functionality inside and you want to change the permissions, you'll have to go down to that register of function names and you'll have to modify it, which is way out of place than where you currently are. And if you want to add another function, you have to go down to the register and add the function. And then you end up with a big long list of functions down the end. It gets quite messy. So what we've done is we've added these attributes called access tags to the class. And the reason we can do this in the runtime environment is because all the clients that are talking to our system come into one central point, of course, because we need to authenticate the users. When they're at that central point, then that runtime environment is allowed to say, I'll go look at that service that you asked for, I'm going to look at the function, and I'm going to see if you have permission to access that function just based on what's inside the comments over there. So in this case, we have two users require access to this function. You need to be a regular user of the system, and you also need to have admin permissions. And the example I've got down here is just a simple class called Attribute Finder, which we'll go down and have a look. All it does, well, you pass in the class name and the method, and it uses reflection. So is anyone not familiar with reflection? Cool, so everyone's got that. So we look inside, have a look what comments exist inside there, and then we just do a little bit of string processing to look for anything with an at symbol. Now, that's completely arbitrary that I said I want a parameter that begins with an at symbol. Once again, the fact that it's an attribute, it doesn't matter what it looks like. I decide exactly what it looks like. And then another function which goes and passes those attributes that are found and looks for all the ones with an access tag inside it. So if we go back and have a look at the example up here, all we end up with is create a new attribute finder for the record service class and tell me who has access. So give me a list of all the people who have access. From there, I can go and iterate through that and say, okay, well, let's have a look at what permissions this particular user has, and then if they don't have the required permissions, then I can just bail out and return an error message. Is there any questions so far? So I'm going to move on to do something else now. Okay, so what I was playing around with was, I thought that's pretty cool, but there's a lot of things you can't do with that. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to permission functions at runtime without having to have my own class. Because if you just wrote a function in PHP and you didn't have one central point of access, there's no way you can permission that function because anyone's allowed to call that function. So I thought it would be cool to play around with a Zendesk extension to the C++ system, which I've never actually done before, and it's a little bit of fun to play around with. The first example here is I thought, okay, instead of just permissioning functions, I want to log every single time a function gets called, and I want to do this at the engine level. I don't want to have to write down this line of code every single time I'm accessing a function. I thought it would be cool if every single time, if you come along and write a script, and that script calls my function, that will get logged, regardless. So what I did was added a thing called a function hook. And what that does is you say, before I continue, has anyone done aspect-oriented programming before? Okay. I've never actually done it before, but my understanding of it is, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's something along the lines of you intercept every single time a function gets called, and then you can respond to that somehow. So when this function gets called, it sort of the code execution jumps out, goes to your execution, and then back to that class. Is that correct? Yeah, so you can sort of inject code at certain points when like an if statement gets called or when a function or a class gets invoked. So it's kind of like that, but the difference is I respond only to functions with particular attributes. So when I add a function hook, I say, tell me when you invoke a function that has the attribute log, well, anything, I can specify whichever attribute I want, call this function here. So my code example here is, I've got two functions. One is a secret action that needs to get logged every time it's done, and it has an attribute again. And once again, I've just made up my own attribute called log, because why can't I? And then I add a function hook down the bottom here, saying every time the log attribute is found inside a function that's getting called, call this function first. And then you can see the function simply just takes the message, which is going to be notice secret action performed. And then I split it apart so I can have my logging levels and my messages, and then I'll go and log that message. And then every single time I have a function that I want to log, I can just put an at log tag in the comments, and it'll automatically get logged behind your back. Now, it's not a huge amount of code, boilerplate code down. That's probably the same amount of code you'd expect from a sort of a user error handler if you're familiar with PHP, all those type of things. And yeah, so another one that I added was I thought it'd be cool if you could, permissioning that I'm talking about, languages like enterprise languages, .NET and Java, they tend to have permissioning at the very core of the language. So if you try and access a method that you don't have permission to, it'll throw a security exception of some sort or it'll throw a security error. And like I was saying, it's not easy to do in a runtime environment, but if you have an extension like this, I can hijack the execute method of every single function at a very low level and say, call this function first. So imagine this perform log function. It wasn't a perform log. Imagine it was a check authentication function instead. And instead of the log tag, log attribute, I had a access tag like I did before. So every single time a function gets called with the access tag in it, it'll get redirected to an authentication function. And then you can quite simply say, if that authentication function returns false, throw a security error or something like that so the function never actually gets executed and it stops it at the very low level. You don't have to worry about having your own security permissioning inside the PHP code anymore. You can just do it through the attributes. And it's completely arbitrary what we would decide to do when these attributes get identified. So I think I got 10 minutes left and my talk's a little faster than I thought, but the reason I left a bit of time at the end was because that's what there is to attribute-oriented programming. Firstly, is there any questions? And then secondly, I'd love to have some feedback if anyone has any other ideas that they think you could do with this sort of technology. Because what I think of it is it's not a complete paradigm like object-oriented programming or functional programming. It's just another tool that you can use in any of those environments. And what you choose to do with that tool is completely up to you. So I've experimented with logging and with security permissioning. Someone else I've seen has experimented with object relational mapping. So they have a class, and for all the member attributes of that class, they'll have they had some YAML code inside there, but you could do like a JSON object or something inside the attributes of that object, and then that would deal with all the object relational mapping for that particular class. So firstly, any questions to clear up if anyone has any questions about attribute-oriented programming?
So there's a question over there. Let's wait for me to bring the mic over so people in video land can hear what's going on.
I'll just jump back to the start. Did that work, by the way? Because I've never tried this before, actually.
What's the performance like compared to, like, in the case of your ACLs, compared to looking up in a database or something like that?
Okay. Well, you have to do some regular expression searching and stuff like that in order to get the attributes to start with. You could do something like with memcached perhaps, which I probably should implement at work. So once you've passed the attributes once, you never have to pass them again, and you can just store them in a hash table. So you say, I have a function name, I'll store that in a hash table, and against that I'll store a data structure with all the different attributes that I've passed once. So I imagine once you've done it once, I mean, I haven't done any stress testing on huge things. We are using it, but because we're using it in that environment where you have to perform all this authentication anyway and you expect that you're going to have to provide authentication over the network, the latency isn't noticeable there. In terms of the logging and things like that, at the Zend engine level, all I've done is I've taken the function pointer for the Zend execute function, which every single time a function gets called, that is the C function that gets called. And I've just done the old switcheroo, so I've got a AOP for attribute-oriented programming execute, and I've assigned that to the variable, to the pointer for function execute. So every single time a function gets executed, it actually calls my function. And then that just, I'm not very good at C++, so and my extension isn't very, I've got a whole bunch of memory leaks and stuff piling out of it. except because it's at that very low level, it'll bail out straight away if it doesn't find any attributes. So if you had an extension that did it, then there'd be pretty much no latency whatsoever. With the passing of strings, well, whatever it takes to pass the set of doc comments. Yeah.
Cool. Any other questions on this talk?
Incidentally, one of the weird things we found, I haven't actually done any real testing of this, I haven't read up on it, but we use the Zend encoder, which takes the PHP code and encodes it down into a bytecode before we put it on our production servers. And my understanding was that that strips out the comments, but still their access control actually works, so I don't know what's happening there, but I'm impressed. That, Okay, well then, is there any other concepts that anyone would like to try with this, or like any ideas? All right, early lunch.
Excellent. Everyone, please thank Peter for his talk. So, after lunch, we have a whole bunch of Python talks, including The State of Python by Richard Jones, An Introduction to PyPy by Michael Hudson, and a... How are they going?
5 for 104. That's lost another wicket then.
Oh, cool.
Well, they took squad in runs.
Okay, looks like Australia will probably win. excellent. And Rusty Russell will be giving a talk as well, so it's worth showing up to that. Everyone, see you after lunch.